I believe there are many parents today who think the spirit of the age is physical discipline is wrong. We are a civilized society. We have gotten beyond the caveman stage of club them over the head and drag them into the cave. And our children are rational human beings. We can talk about this. Talk to me about your feelings, son. Express yourself. But any parent that has actually gone through this situation, unless they happen to have a very compliant child, and they do exist, but most families that have more than one child usually have trouble with at least one of them, relative trouble, realize that words have their limit when it comes to the conflict of wills. So what happens? The child is rebellious. Words, nice words, have been ineffective. They have not accomplished a thing. The child is getting hysterical. Your temperature begins to rise. You realize, I cannot allow this situation to continue. I must have the child to comply. It might be something that's dangerous for the child. The child is not responding. One time, my mother could not find me anywhere. I was 2 years old. She looked all through the house. I wasn't to be seen. She went outside. She couldn't find me. She did notice there was a ladder leaning against the roof. She climbed up the ladder. At the peak of the roof, I was standing there. Now, she had not been to this seminar. She knew very well that if she called me, I would turn around and run the opposite way, possibly to my death. And if not worse, I would be an invalid and she'd have to take care of me the rest of her life. So she quietly snuck up on me and grabbed me. But there are times when you cannot, and your word has to accomplish what's in the best interest of the child. The child must learn to obey you. There are times when his life will depend upon it. The child is right there. You can't get to him. Their car's coming. His ball just rolled out in the street. And you say, John, don't go out in the street. If you have trained him to be a rebel, what will John do? He will run out into the street. You do not do him a favor by teaching him that he can rebel. But what problem do we run into if we think that all physical discipline is off limits? We think, I've just got to accomplish it with my word. And if my word at a normal tone of voice doesn't work, I talk louder. And if that doesn't work, I talk meaner. And then I begin to do all of these things that was in the skit. I threaten. I cajole. I offer a bribe. I appeal to another part of their sinful nature. Now, I haven't touched the child yet, physically, but you have all up in his soul. Don't think you don't damage a child by what you say to him. You do.
Also, if the child is not accustomed to hearing yelling, which yelling is what you do when you don't discipline, you get out of control and yell at them. If they're not accustomed to hearing yelling, when they're in a dangerous situation and the mother yells, they freeze, not because of what they heard, just because the mom's yelling. I mean, it's this fear, just a reaction. They've never heard mom yell. But if they're used to mom's yelling, you know, there won't be that reaction.
No big deal. Just business as usual. Mom's yelling again. They're not impressed. When parents are mad and uncontrolled, they are capable of using brutal methods of punishing their children. And I would include all parents that say, I think spanking is wrong. What happens? I will not spank. I will not sink to such an uncivilized level as laying a hand on my child. He eggs you on. He provokes you. He knows just how to do it. He gets your goat. He gets the goat again. He gets you so furious, so worked up, that even though you have these limits that you've set for yourself, the tide, the flood of rage finally rises to the surface, busts through the dam, and buddy, you better look out, because Dad has lost control. He is a rampaging bull, and who knows what will be left of you or the house when he is done. But he doesn't believe in physical discipline in his right mind. We know of parents, wonderful folks normally, who, when that dam has burst, they have grabbed their little two-year-old and thrust his head in the toilet. They've yanked him by the hair. They've about pulled his ear right off. They've slapped them across the face. They've kicked them. They've thrown them. But if you ask them, do you believe in spanking, they would say, no, that's too brutal. We need to realize that one of the reasons why we might strike a little child with a rod in the most padded place of their body while we are in our right minds, helping with the objective to help the child learn obedience, is to avoid becoming a monster and doing who knows what when they pushed us beyond our limit. As a parent, you can be in complete control in the first 8 years. If you didn't accomplish it there, and if you did everything wrong, you're going to have kind of a time.
I feel like I popped
out. In the first stages, it seems endless. It seems constant. You think, something must be wrong. Nothing is wrong normally. It is, to the degree that you are faithful in those beginning stages, the more faithful you are, the quicker it will end. Depending on the nature of the child, some will need it for a longer period of time. But have the attitude, whenever you discipline your child, I am helping you. My friends, this is the vaccine against crime. Now, vaccines hurt, but it's a small dose to avoid a bigger problem later. And if you, under complete control, can get Johnny to come, assume the position, give him two swats on the behind, excuse me, on the backside, and then talk to him, explain it to him, be reconciled to him. And you do that consistently, even if you must do it 15 times a day sometimes. That child will probably never be in jail. It will have been worth it. Yes, Wendy?
What Anne was saying, does it ever end? Well, one of the main, it ends a lot faster when we're consistent. Because when we're not consistent, they think there's always that chance that this time Mom won't do it, because she doesn't always spank. So they're always trying, always testing you. But if they see consistency always, they'll quit testing a lot sooner. We've noticed that they'll go months of obedience, and then they'll test those boundaries again. There'll be maybe a week with a little bit of testing to make sure they're still the boundaries. But, you know, just a few spankings and it's all over. But by five, I really feel like a normal child by five, you hardly have to spank after that at 5 years.
If you start at age two. At this point in the outline, I'm trying to make the point, the purpose of establishing a certain form of discipline that's relatively mild the first 2 years, and not a whole lot harder during the next 6 years, is to keep you from doing things much worse than that. Do you realize, I believe that is what the purpose of the verses, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. When there was no system of law and order and justice, all grievances had to be redressed by the offended parties. And friend, if you're the offended party, and they poked out the eye of your brother, you think you're going to be content with poking out one of their eyes? You're going to want two. Then when their family comes over to visit you because you poked out two of their eyes, you think they're just going to want to poke out two eyes? Man, they're hot. Who do you think you are? It escalates. Tum, 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 tum. Haven't you ever over-disciplined your child? So we need to put limits on discipline. Not go to one extreme of saying no discipline. That does not do any of us any good. Because we're eventually going to do something when it gets hot enough. And when we get hot enough. Not go to the other extreme, though, of brutality. We must limit the brute that is in each one of us. Most of the reason for disciplining with something like this, that's for me. That's not for him. That's because I can get... I'm three times stronger than that child, and when I am mad, there are things that I would do that in my right mind I would never do. We don't want it to get that far. Don't let your child push you to a rage. If as soon as they are rebellious, if in their first response of rebellion, in that situation in the skit, I wanted to go with Dad, she said, "Johnny, come here." As soon as I did not respond, even though I was just ignoring her, her next response should have been, "Let's go to the room." No discussion about it. We get to the room, we have the discipline, then we will talk.
How do you get in there?
You don't start off playing the piano by playing Rachmaninoff. I mean, you know, dum, 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 dum. So the same way with discipline, there's a starting period, a start up that is not what your steady state, your normal process is. I'm just telling you what's the goal, though, and at the point at which the parent is supposed to respond to the child. Okay? The parent needs to learn, when is it that I need to respond to help the child with discipline? To not let it get worse and worse and worse, and then I explode. And demonstrate the same lack of self-control that I'm trying to correct in my child. And we're just echoing back and forth. Sin, 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 sin. Then we all feel bad and we have a miserable day. The result of proper discipline is true fellowship. Thomas once said, how do you say that, Wendy?
He said he really liked getting spankings. Well, I don't really like it, he says, but it's so much fun, the time that we have together talking, that sometimes, you know, it's kind of nice. We think about the spanking part, he doesn't like that, but he enjoys everything else wrapped up around in it. Also, one time we were at the table, and Henry had to take one of the children out to discipline, and we had company. And they were gone for a little while, and when they came back in, they were laughing and giggling. And the company said, "Oh, he didn't spank him. Oh, they got lucky; they didn't get spanked." Oh, but they did. You know, they did get spanked. But the goal is fellowship afterwards, and so they came out in complete fellowship and joy.
Discipline is not complete until the child is restored to your fellowship. And so I'm never done until my child is smiling and laughing again. We come out better off for having been there. Just had to discipline Caroline yesterday. And it happens very infrequently. For the first 3 months we were back in the States, we hadn't even located an instrument to use just in case anybody was bad. But we finally got one. But in general, they are so submissive. Now, there are times they're disobedient. You know, they don't do what they're supposed to do when they're supposed to do it. But as far as defiance or anything like that, they might not always, you know, stand erect and say, "Yes, sir," but there's a spirit of voluntary submission. And so we're able to give them a lot more room. You know, when a child says, "I'm willing to do whatever you want, but I really would, if it's okay with you, I'd really like to spend another 5 minutes, doing this before I come. I know you asked me to come right now, and I will if you want me to, but I'd really like," well, how are you going to say no to that? You don't have to be a drill sergeant then. They have the spirit of submission. And so you're free to be so generous with them. Because they've learned control. Why is it necessary to use physical discipline? Because a young child is too immature to make decisions according to logic, and too young to make them according to experience. They can't do it all just with their head, figuring it all out. And using a little bit of physical discipline gives them just that firmness that they can kind of lean on as their mind is beginning to process life and understand life.
Okay.
Yes?
Sometimes I'll say to Brian, this thinking will help you to remember when it happens next time you remember.
Uh-huh. And the importance of saying that, which we say too, is the spirit with which you say it. You can say it in a gracious way or in a punishment kind of a way. This is going to help you remember. Or, because I love you so much, and God has commanded me to help you in this way, that's why I'm doing this. Because you are going to feel so good when you start doing it right. Can you tell the difference in the tone of voice? It's not as much the words you say, but the spirit of the grace of God that you communicate to them. We'll talk about that more later. Ready? We've got here physical discipline and punishment. They are two different sorts of ways that you respond. We've talked about this already. Physical discipline is in the area of control. It's the way you respond to their rebellion, physical discipline. And there's something else. We don't really have a really good word for it. We've got the word punishment here, but we don't really mean in the sense of retribution, of paying them back. But it's a means of addressing and teaching them that doing wrong isn't in their best interest. And so maybe restriction would be a better word. If you want to write in restriction, because that doesn't have the same sense of giving them their just desserts. But it's rather letting them, allowing them to experience the consequences of making a bad decision. Physical discipline is the legitimate physical force parents are to use in correcting and restraining a child's rebellion. Physical discipline, spanking, should not be used for all disobedience. When is spanking supposed to be used, or physical discipline, what have we said? For rebellion. That's why it's very important for you to begin to discern, when is my child rebelling? You need to learn to discern, is he rejecting my authority, or is he just falling prey to his own weakness? And but not that he's rejecting my authority. Yes.
And like one example might be, you know, the kids are wrestling in the bedroom and they get carried away and they knock over something and break it. Well, that didn't have anything to do with rebellion against me. And so I'm not going to take them off and spank them. They're going to have to clean up the mess. They may have to do a job to work for money to buy whatever they broke or something like that. But it wasn't rebellion. That wasn't the issue. Are sharing. They don't want to share their toys. You know, there are a lot of different things that are being bad, but aren't rebellion.
For sharing, you would do something like take a toy away, and that would be the punishment, but you wouldn't.
Right.
You
would.
Nobody's going to play with it.
Yeah.
Can't share.
That would be a natural consequence. You wouldn't spank. Are they going to respond to your authority? But just because they respond to your authority does not necessarily mean next time they will naturally share when you're not around. So both things are necessary. They need to learn to respond to your authority, but they will also need to do what is right in situations where their authority is not present. So there are two different things that are going to help them in those two different cases.
At some age, we have to discern whether or not they're mentally able to even remember, you know, from issue to issue. But, after a certain time, you know, and he's throwing his food on the floor and he's playing. After a certain age, I think, you know, don't you have to discern that, yes, he should be remembering this from meal to meal, that he doesn't need to do this.
Oh, they can remember an awful lot more than you think. Yes.
After a while, is it going to have a rebellion issue, or is that still discipline? And if it's a discipline issue, for example, he throws something on the floor, he knows.
When they're at the age still, I'm assuming you mean rather small.
Three.
Because I know there are food fights.
After one.
But,
even at one,
on things like that, since their life is so confined and small, of eating, sleeping, you know, and not hitting, slapping people in the face, their life is relatively a simple situation, and they're fully aware. That's why. So, at first they threw it just because, you know, maybe their hand went, but then they could tell you didn't like it. So now they do it for a different reason. When you've told them not to do it, and then you can tell it's rebellion because they look at you. You know, then it's the rebellion, because they're trying to do what they want to do in opposition to what you want to do. But discerning what point they're at in all of this is very, very important. That's the advanced pressure. That's the instruction ahead of time. Now, obviously, there are certain levels of instruction that are pertinent to each age in life. You know, explaining to a one-year-old how much the carpet costs is going to go right over his head. What a one-year-old understands is, if you do that again, I'll give you a little pop on the hand.
But if you put a plate before a one-year-old and say, now remember, if you throw food on the floor, you get a spanking. And it's already said, it's already established, the rule's set. They don't forget 15 minutes later. When the food goes on the floor, they're out of there. And I said, no, Walt, and I put his hand down. About 2 minutes later, he reached to grab it, and I said, no, Walt, and I put his hand down. About 2 or 3 minutes later, he was reaching to grab it and looking at me at the same time. And I thought, I don't believe it. I mean, I never would have guessed that
a rebel
would have been able to. I mean, and I would never teach spank your five-month-old. Because with the other children, I never saw it at that age, but it was very clear. He reached and he looked with this. It was all over his face. And I pulled his hand down and I popped it and said no. But so it's when you see the rebellion, whatever age that would be, that's the time to start spanking. A little pop, you know, first.
Now let me put this in perspective. I want to mention to you why do most parents discipline their children? And when is it? What is it where it crosses the threshold and the decision is made? The Cohen has dropped. And it's just a matter now of the passion play being played out, but they were going to get it. Most parents develop the unconscious habit of disciplining their children when it becomes uncomfortable or embarrassing for them. That is the trigger. I have had it. See, there's no mention of the child's rebellion or righteousness or anything like that. It's just, I have had it. Me. I am reproducing selfishness and self-centeredness in my child when instead of having an objective standard of righteousness, the standard of righteousness is just how mom's feeling today. You got in my way, and I'm going to tromp you down. We must have an external standard of righteousness that I submit to and the child submits to teach them that that's how life is with God.
And it's not, when you do it that way, it's not that exasperating, oh, gosh, we got to spank him. You know, it's like you get so ticked that he did this to you so that now you got to spank him. It just makes you mad that he's making you spank him. But if you don't have that attitude, if you have it of training and of teaching him, of learning, you know, of righteousness, all of this that Henry's been saying, then it's just a very simple, you know, you don't keep going to lose control. You see it. Okay, hon, come on, honey. You know, it's just very matter of fact. You don't, your emotions don't have to get all in.
They still do from time to time. Please
yeah,
don't
do.
Get.
They
but
do.
But it's not
general,
the same.
It's your attitude is so different. It's just a procedure. Everybody knows it. Let's go. You know, you go, you deal with it. And that's it.
Think about other areas of need of your child. A hunger. You just accept that that child is going to be hungry several times a day. Good grief, he got hungry again. I can't believe it. He's always getting hungry. Now I've got to feed him. Here, eat it. Now, when we talk about discipline, your child needs discipline. It, when done right, it is good, and it's an expression of love. It will help them, just like a cast helps a broken leg. And so when they cross that line of rebellion, even if it's not a situation, the very first time I crossed the line of rebellion by not responding when she said, come here, at that point it was a very gentle thing. And so at first it cost her nothing to repeat herself, to say several things in a very calm tone of voice, because I had not ruined her day yet. I had not insulted her, made her uncomfortable in any way, but I had acted in rebellion. I had crossed the line. But she didn't start getting it in gear until I was aggravating her. And when you wait to let the tripwire be your own self-centeredness, your own desire for comfort, to have your life the way you want to have it, to present the image to the world of your family that you want to present, then you communicate all kind of things to your child that's going to hurt them later on. The issue of rebellion comes up way long before, normally, your own inconvenience. But if your eye is trained to discern it, say, "Oh, that was rebellion. That's just what they said in the talk. Hey, we remember, John, I explained this to you when we got home. This is it, John. So we got to go do this now because here's your spanking. You know, we'll work that all through. Now let me explain to you what's going on, John. You're a sinner just like me. And I have to obey God, and when I don't, there are consequences. And God has commanded me. I said, I don't have a choice on this, John. You rebel? Man, my hands are tied. I'm sorry. The decision is yours. You don't like this? You know what? If you always do what you're supposed to do, I've got good news for you. You will never be spanked again. But whatever you want. If you need it, man, I'm here for you. I'm just here to help you. And you do it when they rebel in its smallest phases, but you can discern that. Now that is it. There it is. You know, I'm fine, you know. I mean, I can let it go. It's not that big of a deal to me. But I know he is rebelling. And now I need to be on automatic pilot. When they push that button, just in the same way, when they come in, it's 12 noon. Man, Mom, I'm so hungry. You just fixed them a sandwich, or you kind of had it in your mind. He was probably going to get hungry around the middle of the day. And that's just normal. I love feeding my kids. Friends, I love disciplining my kids. And I also love it that it's almost never necessary anymore. Sometimes I chat with Thomas about it. I think, you know, it's only every 3, 4, 5 months that an issue comes up with Thomas. So change that attitude from, you cross me and you're going to get it, to, if you need my help, I'm here for you. This is the vaccine against evil in that child's life. This is the smallest thing they will have to face in terms of retribution in their long life on earth as a sinner. And if with such a small payment of two little swats on their thigh or in some other place that's appropriate and pre-established, whose pain lasts only 1 minute, if that will keep them from falling into terrible sins later on, isn't it worth it? Isn't it a small price to pay? Now, of course, it doesn't work if the parent takes this and misuses it. There are many things in your home that you can misuse. Electricity, fire, you have sharp instruments in your home. You have enough in your home right now to murder 12 people. Let's face it, your home is a dangerous place. There is poison there. There are horrible things in your home, but it is all under control. You don't say, oh no, because a knife can be misused, no knives. A fork can be misused too. We will only have some. No, you can gag people with spoons. We're just going to eat with our hands. Plates you can throw at people. You can crash them over people's heads. No plates. You can fall off a chair. No chairs. We're going to sit on the floor. No fire. No, we could burn down the house. No electricity. Somebody could get shocked. So we're not going to have any refrigerator. You can drown in water. No bathtubs. You can try to live like that. But you don't need to live like that, because all of those things are under your control. You have learned how to use fire for benefit and not for harm. How to use electricity for benefit and not for harm. These are all powerful things. And because you have these powerful things in your life, you're here this morning looking as good as you look. Don't lose the benefit of the power of physical discipline. When administered in awesome love and overwhelming grace, it is just that little bit of firmness, of steel in the child's life that helps them to grow straight and tall. If it's not done in grace, if it is not done in love, you yourself know 1 Corinthians 13. it is worthless, powerless, it is destructive and awful. Not because it is bad in itself, but anything done without love, we already know, is not going to produce any good fruit. What should we discipline with? You can read that a little more. The Bible, as you know, talks about using the rod. I'm suggesting, I've made a study of it at HQ, home quarters, and I would recommend, and these things, there is no law. I'm just giving you some recommendations. In fact, this whole thing is just recommendations. To the degree that your spirit witnesses with it, and your understanding of the Scriptures, your knowledge of God, your understanding of your child, someday you will stand before God and you will give an account of what you did. Yeah, but Henry said, no, you too. Don't surrender at this point any of your authority, your responsibility. You know what's best for your child. And so any recommendations, specific recommendations like this, you just take it for information and you make your own decisions. But I'll explain to you how we came to our conclusions. This is a 3/16 inch little dowel. And in the beginning phases, if you still have one that's in a beginning phase, you know, about able to bonk their head on still on the table, when they still have on a diaper, at the very youngest, we'll talk about, I'm kind of jumping ahead to the next topic, but at the very youngest, when they're just starting to walk, one of the key issues at that age in life is their very short attention span on new things. You know, we're kind of getting back to a fuller answer, a development of what Jess was talking about. And the child toddles into the dining room, to the coffee table, and you've removed most things. But you've just decided, there's one thing on there I'd really like to leave. You know, I don't want to have a totally naked living room. So we're going to have one thing left on the coffee table. So he goes over there. It happens to be a fragile thing. It's not replaceable. It's quite valuable. Maybe you should pick something else for the test run of this issue and later put the more valuable thing out there. But nevertheless, he goes over and touches it. Or you can tell he's getting close. No, John. Usually he, often they will respond at first. If you start good and early, then at first they're kind of overawed by this competent giant. And so at first but they'll test the limits, and they'll kind of go by, this is kind of fun. You know, every time I go over here and stretch my hand out toward this thing, whatever it is, I get a response. They don't pay any attention to me other than that. But they could be in the midst of a conversation, and I can get their attention. Watch this. There's their attention. So I think, well, what'll happen if I touch it then? So finally, they've gotten my attention several times, and so they grab it, start playing with it. And at that point, you take it out of their hand, put it back down, and say, look at me. I said no. Everything goes fine. You get back in your conversation. They come back over and say, this is really fun. They talk to me, and they held my hands, and they looked me in the eyes and said whatever that was. And so they grab it again. And once again, you take it out of their hands, put it down, and you say no. But payday's coming. They go the third time, and they think they've got the game down, and they get it, and you take it down, and they said, I said no. Don't knock their hand off, you know. But just enough so that it gets their attention, a little bit of pain, not a lot, just a little pop on their hand. At that point, you wouldn't want to say, oh, rebellion, the rod. Where did I put the rod? You go hunting through the house, because this is the first issue. You find it there in your closet. 15 minutes later, you come back. Where's John? Okay, here's John. John, we're going to the bedroom. Now, assume the position, John. Well, John has totally forgot. What? What is it? What are we doing? What? In the first year, from age 1 to 2, you want it to be as soon after the offense as possible. You want to connect the two. You're not going to do a real ritual right at the very early stage. You want it to happen right then. So you decide, you know, a little bit on the bare thigh, since they've got too much padding with the diaper. Don't discipline in a way that gives absolutely no pain. If the policeman stops you for speeding at 90 miles an hour, he says, boy, you're going to pay now. Give me a quarter. That produces disdain for authority. So a kind of like this on a padded diaper, it's like, come on, Mom. Is that the best you can do? Yes?
Brian will ask him, how hard is it going to be? You know, he knows that sometimes he gets soft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So learn to be measured, just in the same way you're measured in terms of the quantity of food you give them. Now, I want you to eat this amount, and then you can have dessert, all those kind of things. There are many things where a parent sort of becomes somewhat of an amateurish expert in amounts. You know, how long does he need to sleep? How much does he need to eat? How many green beans does he really need to eat?
But
how much pain is necessary to accomplish what we need? Yes?
But by age two, you can take them out. At age two, they remember. They know.
Oh, yes.
It's after like a year and a half.
I'm talking more just at the real little toddler stage.
You're kind of giving instruction along as you're teaching them.
Yeah. Yeah. Because since discipline is for rebellion, if they don't know what the issue is, they cannot rebel against a thing they don't know about.
You're always teaching.
Right.
Yeah, too. This now starts kind of in the middle. I remember shame was a bad word. And we would say it, we didn't know it. So he said the first time we heard
lunch.
It, we were told it was bad. I told my kids 3 chances. The second one might be from habit. Because he didn't say it. The third time, he would be disciplined. And he did say it again because he had been to Sanders school.
Right.
And he recognized, but he quit. But because, you know, he didn't know that it was bad. We didn't say it. He didn't know that it was not allowed.
Yeah.
He had to have a chance to break that habit.
Right. Again, your goal always is to help the child. So, and one of the most helpful things is just to be informed. Always be informing your child. Talk to them. Explain things to them. Don't assume they know all of these things. I remember walking with Walt to a birthday party. He was 3 years old, maybe younger, but it was about 3. And, we had all this time to kill. You know, we had to walk 5 blocks. And I don't remember why. I guess it was because we were going to a party. I began explaining to him the concept of being a guest in someone's home. And what's the difference between being a guest and a host? Because sometimes he'd had people over to his house. And how do you talk? How do you respond? What are the appropriate things to say when you arrive, when you leave, when they offer you something? And so by age 3 and a half, 4, he was, whether he was a host or a guest, he knew what he was supposed to do. He was a key element at age 3 in leading his kindergarten teacher to Christ. And she saw how kind he was, how well behaved he was. She thought, who is his mother? And there she is. All right. The laws of the rod. There are many. What? What's the question? Yes. I would say that the only reason for spanking with the hand, in my opinion, because there's no scripture on this, so is that in the first months of the discipline process, when they are very small, if you have too much of a ritual of getting an instrument, which you normally don't carry around in your hand, that too much time will elapse, and they will lose the connection between what they did wrong and what your response is. So as you're getting off the ground and the toddler phase, a quick response, when you're in control, say, no, I told you no. And as they cry, you sit them on your lap, you talk to them, and I'm explaining it to you again, and you work through that. But on the thigh and on the hand, you're going out the door, granddad shows up, he holds Junior in his lap, and Junior just clobbers him in the face. And you've already explained to Junior that people don't like being hit in the face. And at that point, you can just slip into the bathroom real quick. His thigh is right there. You help him. Give him a little vaccine. Say, now I told you not to slap in the face. And if you're consistent, what happens? In a month, he will never do it again in his life.
But But the reason for not using the hand later, I think you forgot the question, is that...
It's getting there, but I forgot. I lost track.
Okay. One of the reasons is because it's too available. You know, when they're little, you need it available, and but you're just padding with it, basically. But later, it's a lethal weapon, and it's too available, and you'll use it too quickly. And so it's much easier to have the rod. You have to calm down as you go get it. There's much more control there. We have established with our children, they know exactly how many licks they'll get and how painful they'll be. And so there are no surprises. They don't have to worry, oh, Mom's really mad. She's going to let me have it big time on this one. It's always the same. They always know what to expect when they're disciplined. So, but I don't do it. We don't do it with a hand because it's too easy to just haul off and pop them one, you know, out of anger.
The back of my hand. That's one of the key benefits of having an established system of discipline, is it limits your abuses of your authority. Because when you see, the system of discipline, you're submitting to it too. You have said, this is the way we will do it. And so you got to do it that way. You promised them. You said, we will use the rod. So what happens if you don't use the rod? Well, you're reproducing disobedience in their life to the word. You're teaching them you can say one thing and do another. Exhibit A is now leaving the room. Now, we're going to talk now about the laws of the rod. It's very important not to introduce an element of physical force into your family without giving it limits. You do not leave knives lying around your home. You put protective little covers on your wall sockets when your two-year-old tends to crawl around with a paperclip in his mouth. Fire. You're careful to put a screen in front of that fireplace. There are things that whenever you allow a certain powerful element in your home, you're careful to put limits on it, bounds on it, so that it serves its good purpose and doesn't become harmful. The same way with physical discipline. We need to come to the point where we accept that it is necessary, but also never forget it can be misused. It's often misused. Why? Because we're imperfect parents. We don't tend to be gracious people. So the laws that I would suggest for the rod, and these laws are for you more than for the child. Parents must be under the law also. That's how we communicate to the child how they can obey, because they see us being obedient, whether we feel like it or not. Number one, it is prohibited for the child to touch or play with the rod. That is an automatic spanking if they are ever out there being Zorro with the rod. And, oh, it broke. Yeah. Please have more than one. If they think that every time you get it, they're going to overcome you and discipline by just attacking the instrument, you need to very quickly convince them that they are very mistaken. And that any lack of authority for this symbol of lack of respect for the symbol of authority will receive a redress. They will be disciplined for that. Number two, the parent should avoid joking around with the rod. The parent also should not going around playing Zorro a whole lot with the rod. The rod is a sacred instrument for a special use. If the parent wants the child to treat the whole area with respect, the parent needs to treat it with respect too. Not go through the house, you know. Not confuse the issue. It should never be used in anger. Underline it. Highlight it. Write it in every room in your house. And scribe it on your little rod. It should never be used in anger. It should never be used in anger. One of the things that this helps in keeping you from using it in anger is that you normally don't have it with you. And most of your outbursts of anger are just that. They are outbursts. They don't last forever. You don't tend to be a person in constant rage. Some do, but you are all very peaceful people here. You have your moments. You have those moments where it peaks off the chart. That's not a good time to discipline. But that time doesn't last very long. Normally, in the time it takes for you to scoop that little guy up, for you to go and snatch this off the top of the refrigerator and make it to the place of discipline, by that time, the peak has passed. And now you can deal with it like an adult, under complete control. It's very important never to use it in anger. And establishing the pattern of discipline that takes you a little bit of time to get there, and now you can deal with it like an adult, under complete control. It's very important never to use it in anger. And establishing the pattern of discipline that takes you a little bit of time to get there, you'll be a lot more sane. Don't ever grab the thing and start swinging. Have your place, your holy place, set aside. It's Mama's bedroom. I'll meet you there. They go out to the bedroom, you go for the instrument. And by the time you get there, the Holy Spirit has had time to calm you down, to remove the vengeful spirit that had welled up within you, and say, I'm here to help my child. Fourth, the child should learn to cooperate with the discipline process, and it is a learned thing. It is not something that they automatically do to willingly submit to something they hate. Let's face it. Who's made that way? You have made yourself. You have learned to go to the doctor. You don't like going to the doctor. They poke you. They stick you. They tell you bad things. And there's nothing about going to the doctor that naturally appeals to you at the moment. Later it produces all the fruit. There's the reason why you go, the reason why you pay him so much money. And you're so grateful that God has blessed the world with doctors. But let's face it, you don't like the actual act of going to the doctor. Particularly if it's one of these physicals, you know. Anyway. Well, enough said. If you haven't had one yet, you'll know when the time comes. Are you going to say something?
Yeah, well, you may have been going to say it, but we will have a practice time with the children when it's not an issue of discipline. Because that's not the time. When they're about to be disciplined, they, depending on each's personality is different. There's some who will comply and there's no problem. Then there's Amy who will do a little jig on the floor.
Don't spank me.
And there's walking, wait a minute, just give me a minute to breathe, you know.
He starts hyperventilating at the thought.
But we have a practice time when there's no issue, nobody's done anything wrong, we just want them to learn the process.
A time of instruction, make sure.
It's a time of teaching, so that they know. I mean, they still, just because you've had that doesn't mean that then when there's a problem that they won't wiggle and stuff. But it helps greatly that they already know the procedure, they're not worried about whether being spanked. And you practice that. And they can learn. I mean, if Amy Clay can learn to do it, anybody can learn.
Oh, yes.
You practice, take them to the place of discipline.
Uh-huh. And they get in the position, and you pretend like you're going to spank them. Then they stand up, and they sit up the whole thing.
When there's not a discipline issue, it's a game. It's ha-ha. You know, let's play doctor.
The whole bit. We practice the whole
Let's pretend they were going to have an operation. Ha ha, you know. When it actually is an appendectomy, it's no ha ha. But at least they've run through it and they know kind of what's going to happen. We'll talk more about that in a minute. A child should never be spanked on the run. You come back here, I'm going to get you. Don't chase your child through the house swinging at them. You may never have done that, but I've seen an awful lot, enough parents who do, so that I'm just going to state that that's one of the laws of the rod. This is not the chase scene in Zorro. Six, always use it according to the manner established. Don't be eternally creative in your discipline. Well, this time we're going to give it to you on the soles of your feet. You were wondering what we were going to do this time. Have it established. They know, when you say it's time to discipline you, they know exactly what that means. They know the place. They know the manner. They know about how much pain, how long that pain will last, how many swats. They know that afterwards you're going to talk to them. There's going to be forgiveness. And by the time they leave your presence, they're going to be smiling. They know all of that. And you are just as consistent as the sunrise every morning. That's what gives stability and security in their life. Yes?
Just thinking about that, if I'm in the car or somewhere where I can't touch them in public, I'll say that's one, and then it's, that's two. You know, so by the time we get home, he knows exactly how many he's going to get.
We would probably consider the possibility of when it was one, stopping the car and not let that hang over his head. You cannot always do that. But to the degree you can go ahead and deal with it, go ahead and deal with it. Never put off any discipline that you can.
Three of mine out shopping, and we all went to the car first thing.
You left all your groceries in the store, right?
I wasn't at the grocery store.
Oh, this happened another time, though. You said we all left the grocery store, went out to the car.
No. You got somebody else's story.
These legends grow up, you know.
Yeah. No, I was at a clothing store. But we left everything and went to the car and had the spanking.
Why do you want to maintain to a minimum the distance in time between the offense and the addressing of the offense? It is because the longer that time gap is, the more they will think, well, I won't have to pay for it yet. It's like a credit card, you know? It's postponed. It's almost like maybe it won't even ever come. If they know that any place, any time, you rebel against Dad, Dad's going to help you. He will find a way. Love will find a way to help you right then. There was one man that made a tremendous impact on us. He's as everyone does, he has his faults and he's eccentric in certain ways. But he had several children of his own and also had about six adopted children from varying degrees of difficult backgrounds. And the highest priority for him in any situation was the consistency of his discipline with the children. And he was our conference speaker. And in the middle of his sermon, he looks up in the balcony. I can't remember the child's name, but we'll just call him John, since we're poor little John. We're using his name. Sorry, is there a John in here? And he looks up right in mid-sentence, stops, and he says, "John, sit down." And we're all wondering, who is John, you know? It's his three-year-old up in the balcony. And he waits. John sits down. You know why? John knows that if he doesn't sit down, in about 15 seconds, Dad's going to be there. Nothing will stop his ministering to his son when he needs it. He will stop the car. He will interrupt the grandparents. He will do whatever it takes to help his son when he needs it. As much as you can, avoid, like the plague, saving up offenses. Sometimes you have no other choice. It does happen. Sometimes you have no other choice. But as much as you can avoid it, you want to make it as brief as possible. The Lord wants us, when we fall, to get back up. He wants a quick restoration to fellowship. Not this lengthy thing. Man, in 5 hours, when your dad gets home, you're going to get it. And he's living under a cloud the next 5 hours. Let's deal with it now. Let's take him to Dad right at work. No, let's deal with it here. Yes, Cindy. If you have nothing else,
in church,
in very exceptional cases, they know that it's an exception, you know, because you're not in your normal home setting. So you're not violating the rule. You're living within the constraints of your reality. When you go on a trip, this fits in a suitcase. But there are moments, but it doesn't happen that often. Once they know that just like the sun coming up, if I do this, this is going to happen. If they know it every time that's going to happen, then it settles it for them. Were you going to say something? Laurie, did you have a question?
I was going to say, in our society today, you cannot just hit your kid in the grocery store anymore.
Right.
Or even in the car. I've had girlfriends, DSS, come
because someone reported them for getting their kids in a car.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. You just can't do it any time and any
right.
place.
Exactly.
Unless you can take them in a balance.
You live with the constraints of what you have. As long as you are, and that those are so exceptional times. 95% of all your discipline takes place within your home.
You know. It's really important. I know for me, maybe not for others, but for me, it's real hard for me to go spank them afterwards. When several hours have gone by, I'll either forget it or I'll just think, oh, well, let's let it pass. You know, it's real hard for me. That's a weakness of mine. If I don't do it right then, I tend to kind of, because I'm sitting here remembering I've got a situation to go home and deal with, that very thing happened.
Right.
In America, most places have bathrooms, thank the Lord. And if people, after your process of discipline, see a happy child, they won't even suspect that anything happened. If you discipline and if you get to the point of getting their cooperation in the discipline, there will be no telltale trace because you did not abuse the child. You helped the child. 7, discipline them in private as much as possible. When should you discipline with the rod?
Discipline in private, by the way, means that a brother and sister is not in there.
No gawkers, you know, peeking in. They love it, you know. They're not getting it. We all love to see someone else get it.
Do you need discipline for that, for a sibling laughing, or?
No, that's not rebellion. We address that.
I mean, but something should be done.
Yeah, we address that.
Yeah. But you discipline with the rod for what? Rebellion. When should you discipline with the rod? Okay, well, that's where we are now. For rebellion, yes, I was ahead of myself. Secondly, we also use the rod for lying. Just because the whole issue of truth is so important that we just decided that was an issue we needed to really camp on. We haven't had to, it's not happened very frequently, but when it does, they know that we take truth that seriously. Third, when they intentionally injure another, this might save you from a lawsuit someday of what your kid did to another kid. When they are little, before they get a whole lot of poundage behind their punch, teach them, you choose to hurt somebody else and you will suffer some pain. You cannot cause someone else to hurt without also receiving pain so that you will know what it feels like. And that very quickly changes their attitude toward hitting others. Maybe not very quickly. Sometimes you have to work it for a while. It depends on the child. Some children are just tougher. They're tougher on others, and they can take it a lot more. Every child is different. So, but in general, that's something we choose to use a physical... We address it physically because it's a physical issue. It's already an issue of pain, them to somebody else. And so that's our way of giving them, showing them a consequence and helping them to relate to what they did to that other person.
We also, in situations like that, do a lot of teaching with that and a lot of praying. I mean, it depends on the child, but there are some children, one of our children really struggled in that area of being cruel to other children and purposely hurting them. And so we would always spank. But we did a lot of talking about that, and we did a lot of spiritual warfare and praying for them also. So it's, I don't know which one of those three things helped that child
right.
the most, but we did a lot.
The rod, for what it is good for, it is very good for, but it is limited. It is limited. Frankly, you can go a lot further with just unconditional love than you can go with any physical discipline. But the balance between the two is the most powerful combination. 4, when should you discipline with the rod? When they refuse to be reconciled with one another. How many of you have more than one child? Okay, that's most of you. How many of you grew up not as an only child. You had brothers and sisters? Okay. Well, then you can probably understand that sibling rivalry is a common thing. Disagreement. I remember chasing my sister down the hall and punching her on the back. I still feel bad about that. I'm glad that is, you know, comfort. I'm sure that's comforting to her. And this is kind of just a tidbit we're throwing in along with the rest. It's a slight deviation from the course, but it's you can teach your children to live at peace with each other. And the rod helps with that. I feel like I'm on one of these 800 numbers selling the rod. You know, not only will it do this, but it also dices and slices. But it's a very common thing for brother and sister, brother, brother, sister, sister, to come to you, that particularly when they're close in age, with a dispute to settle. Often the more aggrieved party will show up first, and then the other will come to make his voice known. I'll never forget when that happened with Walton Thomas. I don't remember what the issue was. You seldom do remember. And I don't know. I assume it was just the Lord. The Lord is very gracious to imperfect parents. And the thought occurred to me from the Scripture how God requires us to live at peace with one another and how it is wrong to go to the judge to settle everything in lawsuits. So I told Walton Thomas, I said, don't explain it to me, please. I'm sure you both have your reasons. I will give you 5 minutes to discuss it amongst yourselves, to come to a common agreement of with which you're both satisfied. And if in 5 minutes you are still in disagreement and angry at one another, I will spank you both. I don't care what has happened. God requires you to live at peace and to work things out. You've got 5 minutes. In 5 minutes, I talk with him. They had talked as the most intimate friends. Their only hope of avoiding a discipline, moment of physical discipline, was to gain the agreement of the other brother. Thomas, are you completely satisfied? What did y'all decide this? Are you completely satisfied, Thomas? Yes, completely satisfied. Walt, how about you? Are you happy with this? Yes, we are just, everything's fine. You don't need a spanking? Nope. It has worked every time. I don't think we have ever had to actually spank them. It gave them just enough back pressure. And it is teaching them, don't go to the lawyer, don't go to the judge. You can live reconciled with your brother if both of you are living in the fear of God. And so we put the fear, a little bit, a touch of the fear of the rod in them, and it was just what was the extra help they needed to come to an agreement.
It's good, though, when at all possible, to hear how they come to an agreement, because almost always one is a little more dominant than the other. And you'll tend to see with time that the agreements they come to always tend to be the way the more dominant wants it to be. And so then that's teaching. That's not discipline. But then you need to begin teaching. And teaching that dominant one to serve and to consider his brother's interest more important than his own.
Be more fair.
Yeah. So that is important, not to just let them, you know, work it out. We need to be involved at that age of helping them with that.
We're now on handout number 5, or chapter number 5, which will deal with stages in discipline with rod and other topics. The technique of using the rod, this is the Jimmy Connors explanation of the rod here. The idea of this little rod is not a blow, but a swat, a slap, okay? It doesn't weigh anything at all. You should always practice on yourself. I practice on my thigh or on my hand. About whatever, you know, just kind of getting an idea with a little cloth on, and sometimes with on bare skin, you should have a very exact first-hand knowledge of what level of pain you're inflicting. You should know that that doesn't hurt. You will only know that is if you practice on yourself. Because you need to be in control, and you have to discern how hard and how many. And don't guess by how loud they yell or whether they don't yell. They might not yell. You don't know. But you know that that hurts. You know that hurts. And you know how long it hurts you. And then you wait. How long do you have to wait before you really can't feel it anymore? At that point, they should not be screaming. If they're screaming when the pain is gone, that's rebellion. They're manipulating you. So please practice on yourself. I'm very serious about that.
So when they're screaming, what do you
mean? Oh, well, that's all for... We're painting the ideal. We're painting the ideal. I know these things will rise to your mind because you've got to walk before you can run. I'm explaining the running and you are still wondering if you'll ever crawl. Okay. So, would someone read Proverbs 22:15, please? On your handout there.
Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of discipline will remove it far from it.
And Proverbs 23 says, do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you beat him with the rod, he will not die. It didn't say club. You shall beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from Sheol. The purpose is to deliver him, not to punish him. It's to help him. Stages in discipline. It was too controversial to put in print. I will give you my suggestions, and you can act according to your own conscience. But I would say that the kind of some stages we've been through is in this first year of toddler up till about 2 years old, up till really they're potty trained. When it's kind of a transition in many ways from going to wearing a diaper to not needing a diaper. And so as long as they have a diaper, we would use the thick part of the thigh. You know, it's nice and padded and you're not going to break anything. It leaves just a little red line. And within a minute, within 60 seconds, they don't feel it anymore. At the very early stages, you know, use that, maybe using the hand a little bit more just because you know their attention span is very short. But rapidly during this year, transitioning into using the rod and probably on the thigh. Then once they are potty trained and no diaper, they have graduated, and you can probably go to the longer rod when they're real little and it's on the thigh. You can just have a little one around. My recommendation is against using spatulas and wooden spoons. But, you know, it's just my opinion. We have used both. I'll never forget, Thomas, the very first night we used a wooden spoon because we thought rod was just too brutal, you know. Actually, the rod is the lesser instrument to use, although it accomplishes the same purposes very effectively. And the boys had done something bad. That was the night they broke the bed, wasn't it? Yeah, they broke the bed, jumping up and down on it. And so we introduced them to the wooden spoon, and because we heard this concept about not using your hand, and man, Thomas was good for 3 months after that. Oh, he had so much respect. The wooden, not the wooden spoon. But judging it after the fact, and realizing that the mark it leaves lasts several hours. We just decided if the same thing can be accomplished with a little switch, with a little slap that leaves just a tiny little pink line and is soon gone, that if the goal can be accomplished with the rod, it would be better. And also, a spoon is used for many things. It's nice to have something that is dedicated just to that purpose. It's a way of raising the respect of the instrument and of the process. So at this point, we use the portion of their body on which they sit. They're still under 8 years of age. That's not yet an issue. We're by ourselves in the bedroom, you know, and we have them uncover that part of their body, and we switch them there because that's just the softest, most padded place, and yet it fully gets their attention. But once 8 years comes up, that really becomes less and less appropriate, becomes more and more embarrassing. You know, they're in school, and you know, your decision in here might vary. But you wonder.
Opposite sex also.
When they're real little, that's just not an issue. I mean, you're giving them baths, you're doing all these things, but you need to kind of discern when do we need to transition, and when would it be appropriate? Up to what point is it appropriate for mom to discipline the boys in that way, etc., and vice versa. So we followed what the book said in a transitioning at some point around 8 years old to the bare back. It sounds terrible, I know. By that time, if you've done what you should do, it happens so seldom anyway. Walt's maybe been disciplined twice in the last year. They have so full respect for the rod, and they would admit it helps them to avoid evil. I asked Thomas one time. Thomas is such a card. I said, Thomas, now be honest with me, Thomas. Wouldn't you really rather to be able to do anything you wanted to and never have to worry about getting a spanking? Moment of silence. Thomas is thinking about it. And he said, well, yes and no. Not really. Because he said, there's been so many times when I was thinking about doing something wrong. And then I thought, no, but if I do that, I'll get a spanking. Better not do it. And he said, I felt so much better afterwards for having done what was right. But it was the idea that I was going to get a spanking that got me through the temptation. He was 8 years old. So you'll have to answer this for yourself. But these are different elements. The back is a very strong part of the body. There's no chance that you'll really hurt the child. This part right here is just muscles. And a little switch on the back. It's more symbolic. Same way I did on my leg. Just right like this. I just have him stand against the wall like this. I'm not going to get my 10-year-old to lay over my lap.
When do you go to the bamboo cane?
With the boys. Above age 8, you might ought to get a little bit of a thicker rod. They were very proud when they graduated to the thicker rod.
Walt said
he was good, now. Yeah, we're not little kids anymore, you know. Now, again, if you've done what you're supposed to do, it's almost a non-issue. It almost gets to be theoretical at this point because there's not as many discipline cases.
I have spanked Walt twice on the back, and I've never spanked Thomas on the back.
And we've been spanking on the back for 2 years.
So how long have you been doing this? You know, it's kind of, we need to be careful these don't step into this.
Right.
Yeah, we've been doing it since they were little.
Yeah.
That's the problem. They need to... I think our children, we need to give them the warning, basically, to know that this is going to be the consequence.
Right.
You know, if you're just starting, it'll be done a lot more.
Yeah.
We're talking about those who have little babies. That's the hope. That's, you know, the excitement that this isn't something that goes on forever. I mean, by the time they're 5 or 6, you're almost not doing it anymore. I mean, even that young. But if you're starting with them at age 7 or 8, yeah, it's going to be...
We're not going to run around with everything.
But it's a change. It's a change from what you've been doing and needs a lot of explanation. Yes?
I heard on an Ezra page that they said that they had some parents who were starting with their kids who were old enough to reason, like your kids are old enough. And they sat down and said, no, this is what we did. We went to a seminar and we told them what they did and then they practiced. Like she was talking about.
Yeah.
They would know what to expect. And then it said they only had to do it like 2 or 3 times, and that was it. But they told them, we did. We learned how to be better parents. So we went to the thing, and
Yeah, you want to communicate to your kids when you're going to make a transition. Anything? No, obviously not. But they don't need to know everything. There's some things they do need to know, depending on their age. But the attitude with which you need to come to it at, with is, we now declare war. This is the line.
You laughed at it. We took our kids to Chuck E. Cheese last night. We told them tomorrow things change. We told them that, we're going to be educated.
But you want to communicate to them that that means changes for you, limits on you, and limits on them, and that it's for you as a family to do something together for the glory of God. That's a totally different atmosphere than, all right, man, you're going to get it. I mean, you have been living it up. Your days are numbered. Your time is coming. You don't want to give that attitude. They say, the Lord, you know, first thing you want to tell your parent, your children is to ask their forgiveness. And, you know, Mom and Dad, we really love you, but we can only act according to what we understand. And sometimes our understanding is imperfect. And I know that there are certain ways you have suffered because we have let you get away with things. And at the moment, it seemed to you like it was great. But you would be a lot happier now if I had helped you better with the discipline process. And I'm sorry for the suffering I brought in your life by not properly loving you through and disciplining you. Yes?
Well, I think, you know, when my kids were little, I kind of had this, you know, as far as disciplining and using the rod and that sort of thing. But then they get to an age like where they're at now, and it's like, now what do you do? You know, because you didn't really have a proper training kind of thing. You know,
right.
It's like a power struggle all of a sudden.
And it wasn't for rebellion. It was based on the conflict of comforts and desires.
Right.
All the basics of the rationale behind it, they should know too. It's not you're the know-it-all, and all they know is just this. You want them to be as much experts as you. Thomas and Walt could talk with you for 30 minutes about all of this. They are believers. They are more true believers in it than we are, because they've received the blessings of it. But Annie too, even Annie, as hard as it was for her to get it at the beginning.
She is just getting to where she would say to you she would prefer spanking. Caroline is still, you know, there. But they respond and they obey, but they haven't gotten where the boys are, where they understand it is a blessing to have gone through that. It's bondage and freedom, you know.
Yeah. Why should we use a rod to discipline our children? I will skip down to the last paragraph of that. The objective of physical discipline is not, I repeat, not to beat a child into submission by the use of brute force. Often when a paddle, board, or belt is used, it becomes a challenge to a male youth to prove his manhood by enduring the maximum force. The pain received from a rod is more humbling than harmful. There's no defense against it, etc. That's also, it also helps the attitude, if you have the attitude of, I'm here to help you, correct you, this is not your just deserts and your punishment, and I'm going to, because then if they can resist it and show that, well, you can't pay me back, man, I can take it. You see, if you approach it with an attitude of love and of sorrow, they will enter into that same spirit. Instead of it being a rivalry, it will be a reconciliation.
Where it talks about it's not to make them be repentant?
No. Suggested dialogue. Now, this is, again, what you're working toward. Would you call one of the children in? Walt really gets a kick out of doing it. So Thomas would be fine. But this suggested dialogue, you would want to practice several times. Have the discipline game. You know, okay, time to play the discipline game. We're going to play this for about 5-10 minutes, then we're going to have some juice and cookies. Oh, great, you know, so they do it. It's almost as much fun as watching somebody else get a spanking, you know, is doing it all but not getting a spanking, you know. It's like money in the bank. And so you practice it all like it's a little play. I'll show you basically the process with one of my children here. Walt loves this. All right, Walt. Come to Daddy's room. And we're going to pretend that Walt is a lot smaller than he is. Walt's really only this tall in this skit. And Walt, you can get across my lap. I won't make him do the other part of making this more available here. Okay, sit on my lap. You're supposed to be screaming. Okay, you can cry quietly now. Now, why did Daddy spank you? What did you do wrong? Think of something.
I hit Thomas.
You hit Thomas. And you know that's wrong, right? Okay, you can ask for forgiveness now.
I'm sorry, Daddy. Please forgive me.
Okay, look me in the eyes. I forgive you, and I love you. And even if you always do everything wrong, I will always love you. But when you stumble and do something wrong, Daddy has to help you. Because God told me to help you in this way. But I've got good news for you. Do you like being spanked? No. It hurts, doesn't it? But you know what? If you always obey Daddy and do what's right, you will never be spanked again. This could be your very last spanking. Wouldn't that be nice? All right. Well, give me a kiss. A hug. Bigger hug. That's it. When it's an offense against somebody else, then there's other things that they need to take care of. Yes, we do. Suggest a dialogue. Come here. Get in the position. Now, Walt's normal position is like this now. And he knows that it will keep the spanking to a minimum to the degree that he doesn't wiggle around. You want them to always benefit from their self-control. And the way to get the absolute minimum in the spanking process is to completely cooperate with it. If they don't cooperate, then it's going to be a long, drawn-out process and several spankings. And then you say, you must really get a kick out of this. You like this. You got 10 swats. Wouldn't you rather just get 2? Well, let's practice it now so that next time you won't have to go through all this. This is terrible. So let's practice it now. And the next time, what is it you need to do to just get the minimum? You know, make it sound like this is a bargain, you know. Come in, they do this. Great, man, you do that, you just get the minimum. You don't have to get all this other extra stuff. I think you can do that, don't you? Yeah. So they work on it. And with some it takes, just because their fear of pain is so great, they just kind of go hysterical. But they can control themselves.
Put their hand back there, you know.
Yeah, you'll have to spank their hand. Anytime when they're covering themselves, when they know that the little ones know their position is over my lap, arms there, not there. And that usually would take us a week to a month to really get that down. Yeah, if their hands are in the way, then that's a separate issue. We've got to deal with the hands. So we spank the hands. Now, calmly, put your hands where they're supposed to go. Put your hands where they're supposed to go. Now, you don't drag it out 45 times, you know.
You put their hands where they're supposed to go if it goes that many times. You don't end up having black and blue hands, you know, but they do have to end up obeying, whether by force or whether by obeying from spanking, one or the other.
They need to know that by resisting, they only make things worse. That's basically what you need to communicate. You don't have to stay there 4 hours and all this kind of stuff. As long as they are convinced that by resisting they gain nothing, they will soon stop resisting. Every sinner does what is in his own best interest. So you need to at least communicate that it is not in your best interest to resist and dance around. It only makes things worse for you. They're not dumb. They'll get the message.
Yeah, I would say in the case of the really disturbed case, like this, with my friend, they were so great at boarding school, but there was a time they disciplined me, and I would not be.
Yeah.
Okay, then I think if there's, and you might not explain it better, but if there's a gap there, there's no win situation.
And there's no way of measuring to what degree your whole process of discipline is made so much more difficult, if not impossible, if your child does not believe you love them. You can only accomplish so much with the rod, and you can never fill the gap that a lack of love leaves.
It's extremely important when you're starting late in the game. You know, if you're starting with a child who's older, that as you, you know, now you're going home and that we're going to have stricter rules and we're, you know, we're going to start, mom's going to buckle down and really do this. It's very important as you increase the discipline that you increase the love, that you spend more time touching them, holding them, talking to them, because it's not fair to just keep life normal except for you're beating them up now, you know, so to speak. But you need to be extremely in control in doing it all, and you need to give them lots of, they need extra love because this is a hard change to go through. So, you know, it always needs to be balanced.
Let's try to move rapidly now. I'd like to just go ahead and try to draw this to close in the next 10 minutes just because we are already over our time a little bit. What purpose does physical discipline serve? Skipping to the second paragraph, the objective of physical discipline is not to cause pain, stripes, tears, or sorrow, although it might cause all of those, but to bring a rebellious child's will under control. Keep in mind what the objective is. Parents should not establish the criterion that a child must cry or give some emotional demonstration of sorrow to end the physical discipline. I'm going to beat you until you cry. I mean, as long as you have practiced on yourself, and you know it hurts, the amount of force you're using, you know that hurts. Whether they cry or not, you know it's not something that they would just prefer to happen to them for fun. True repentance is a voluntary change of thinking that must come from the inside, and it cannot be forced by external pressure. Each child is sorry. Sorry that he got caught. God has to produce true repentance. You're just providing a brace, so to speak, to help that plant grow right. But you cannot produce directly an internal change in the spirit of a child. That's more through your love, through your good example, and through your prayers. Warfare praying is very important. Gosh, I'm going to digress again, but this thing with Thomas was so important. When he was 2 and a half, was it? Grumpy Thomas? He went into a period of his life, his short life, where he would go into these black moods of depression. He was like the cartoon figure that the little black cloud is over his head as he walks around. And he's got this vulture look on his face and just spreads gloom throughout the house. He was just 2 and a half. And he'd walk around and talk with a deep voice. Look, everything was bad. And he wouldn't even talk a whole lot, but he'd just be grumpy. We called him Grumpy Thomas. And we tried everything in our bag of tricks. I mean, we tried. What had worked with Walt was we just let him stay on his bed until he had a happy face. He never got one. It worked with Walt. You know, Walt within 5 minutes, he'd stay there all day. That wasn't doing it. So we tried. Well, maybe it's a Maybe he's being rebellious. We hadn't read the book yet, so we didn't have it all as in those terms. So, but we tried physically disciplining him. He was still grumpy.
Worse.
We tried talking to him. We explained things to them, so we'd put our arm. I said, "We'll put our arm over your face, the magic arm, and when you pull it down, then when we take it away, you'll be smiling. Make a game out of it." Grumpy Thomas. For a time, that looked like it was going to work, you know, and he'd say, "Oh, I can't because I need your magic arm," you know, so we do the magic arm thing. But that ran out of gas. I mean, not even the magic arm would get him out of his moods. And then what happened that we thought that...
One day somebody, I was just sharing that with someone, and she said to me, "Have you ever thought about the possibility of oppression?" I said, "No."
Spiritual oppression.
Spiritual oppression. What are you talking about, you know? And, I mean, it never occurred to us that it should be a prayer battle that could be won in prayer. So that's when we began to pray. When he'd get in that mood, this is time to pray. And we'd pray with him and we'd pray separately.
But the very first time that we tried that, and he was grumpy, and we said, come over here, Thomas, let me pray for you. Maybe it's a spiritual thing. You know, he's just 2 and a half. Prayed for him, took authority over it, it was gone like that. The very first time, this was not a process. Thomas was just as surprised as we were. It was like, hey, whatever that was, that worked. Thomas, at age 3, was a true believer in prayer. The kids believe in prayer because they have seen victories in their own life over things that they knew were unconquerable. Everybody was at their wit's end. They didn't want to be that way either, and they couldn't break out of it. Haven't you been in a mood where you couldn't get out of it? Well, kids too. And to see God break it. Now, I'm not saying every situation is different, every kid's different. I just want to give you another idea of something that helped us.
Yeah, I went to do that with Brian, and in fact, it was pretty recent. And it got into this more, it was more of a war at that point. But he just started screaming, got red in the face, and just would not stop. And I looked down and I said, this is not my son. I don't know. So I took authority, and I laid my hand on his head while he was screaming, and I prayed over him, and he quieted right down.
Praise God.
And I said to Jay, I said, you know, of course, I felt all the time, I said, but I knew something wasn't right, and I needed to...